Ian Thomas was in his car. He was racing across the country. He had to get to his mother as quickly as he could. It was the middle of the pandemic, and she was very ill. Ian didn't make it in time. She died halfway through the journey. The news crushed him. What had to happen next, though, would be just as painful. He had to turn the car around
and drive home and explain to my kids, you know, this is what's happened. And it really upset them.
Ian is a father, a poet, an author, and an advertising creative. And while this part of his personal life was collapsing, a part of his professional life was just starting to unfold. Ian had been experimenting with an early version of what would become ChatGPT. He was fascinated by how this large language model changed the way he worked and how he created. And so he wondered, could this machine help his kids understand what happened to their grandmother? So he asked the large language model a question that no algorithm was built to answer.
I said to it, how do I explain death to my children?
The answer that came back wasn't robotic. It was beautiful. Human, even.
Encourage them to celebrate the lives of other people. Tell them that the dead are not dead, not in the way we think of it. Tell them they live on, as they are remembered. Tell them every goodbye is really a hello to a different way of being. Tell them they are loved and will always be loved. Tell them they never have to feel alone. Never. Tell them the world is magical and mysterious and strange. Tell them they are part of the mystery and the magic and the beauty of it.
The magic and beauty of this response confirmed a suspicion that Ian held. Large language models were about to unleash an entirely new way for humans to make things.
In the same way that the printing press introduced the concept of the book and changed the way that we could express ourselves, AI fundamentally introduces new forms of creative expressions, which is really interesting.
This is an episode about discovering the creative potential in a tool you thought might only automate your job away. It's a story that starts with grief and poetry, detours into, of all things, soft drinks from the future, and drives Ian to realize that AI can unleash your creativity, not diminish it. I'm Matthew Braga, and this is Working Smarter, a podcast from Dropbox about how AI is changing the way we work and how we get stuff done, and how to push the limits of your creative boundaries. The same technology that many people fear will replace them at work is helping Ian Thomas fall back in love with his own job. He's written poetry with LLMs. He co-wrote a book with an LLM called What Makes Us Human. And a couple years ago, he co-founded an agency called Sounds Fun. He's the chief innovation officer there.
So Sounds Fun is born out of the thesis that AI and technology is going to fundamentally change the way people experience the world, the way they communicate, the way they engage with culture. And so we created a studio specifically focused on realizing that future in as many different ways as possible. We often say we're kind of a mix between Thomas Edison's lab and Andy Warhol's art factory. And it's a lot of fun, which is implied in the name.
It certainly sounds like Ian's all in on AI's potential for creative work. And there's at least a couple of reasons for that. One is the deeply personal experience you just heard, where Ian used AI to help explain death to his children. And the other is rooted in a specific kind of irritation he felt in his advertising career. I want to begin where your particular adventures with AI begin, because I think you were a little frustrated with your career and the sort of work that you were doing. What happened? What led you to that point?
I think where I was is I looked at what I was doing as someone who grew up as a copywriter. You know, I studied copywriting, which of course is one of the careers that's, you know, very threatened by AI right now. And I realized that I was spending some of my time thinking of really big thoughts and big campaign ideas, and then a lot of time doing more rote work where I would take a headline, I would kind of reformat it for a billboard, I would turn it into a live read. And so I had this idea that it was something that could probably be automated. because while it is creative work, there were definitely patterns to what I was doing, and there were mechanisms to it that I would repeat again and again and again. And then one day, a friend of mine sent me a link to something called copysmith.ai, and it, you know, said on the box effectively, this tool automates copywriting. And so I reached out to the founder of the company, who was this incredible, at that point in time, 23-year-old woman in Canada, Jasmine Wang, caught her over breakfast in the middle of the pandemic and said, I don't care how I'm involved with this, but I have to be involved with this because I think this is the future. You know, one of the things I always said to young creative people, I still say to young creative writers, is that good thinking is good writing and good writing is good thinking. And I could see that if this tool, which was powered by GPT-3, could create very basic taglines and Facebook ad headlines, then there was this exponential curve somewhere behind it in terms of what it was capable of. And if you've lived a life around technology and, you know, interested in technology, then you understand how things scale and how things progress. And so I could kind of see if this is step one, then step 2, 3, 10, 100 are going to be crazy. So I got involved with her company. I kind of advised them on how I work as a copywriter. And as I was kind of going through this process where I was investigating how copywriting works with GPT-3, I said to Jasmine, there's so much more that we can do with this. You know, what if we use this to make a piece of art or to write a book or to do something else? And so I started investigating that, which led to a book called What Makes Us Human.
And maybe you can walk me through, like, what was the leap there? Like, what were you doing at the time with Jasmine and Copysmith? And how did that work jump from copywriting to, hey, you know, can AI write a book?
So I learned in my creative career that I needed to have creative outlets besides copywriting. So I could take a creative project from my studio, you know, at work. Mm-hmm. And I could go home and I could work on another project, and they would kind of inform each other and build this momentum backwards and forwards. And so I've always had that, and I'm lucky enough to have written several collections of best-selling poetry, which is a very bizarre thing to create a bestseller out of. But I was looking at what Jasmine and me were doing, and I realized I could apply the same kind of thinking to it, where I could say, what else can this be? What else can we do with this? And then
pushing the limits almost.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's something that, you know, we've started a company purely based on that, on going, what are the limits of this and what is the next possible step?
The book is called What Makes Us Human. And I'm wondering if you can just elaborate a little bit, like what was the approach and curiosity around that, especially compared to some of the previous titles that you've published?
So during the pandemic, I had an experience where my mother was terminally ill, and I had this very traumatic experience where I tried to drive across the country to go and visit her and be with her in her final days, and she passed halfway through the journey. And I had to turn the car around and drive home and explain to my kids, you know, this is what's happened. And it really upset them. And so, you know, something that I've always done is kind of taken the things that go on in my own life and try and channel them into my work and try and figure out ways, you know, to process them. And so the way we were using Copysmith and GPT-3 was we were taking, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 different headlines as examples for GPT-3 and then asking to generate a new one based on new input. And that's how you interacted with it. It wasn't ChatGPT where you could just ask it to do something. So late one night, soon after that incident, I sat there and I put in a passage from the Bible and something from the poetry of Rumi and something from the Tao Te Ching. And, you know, this collection of texts that had kind of brought me a degree of comfort in my life or created a sense of awe. Mm-hmm. And then based off that series of prompts, I said to it, how do I explain death to my children? And I got back this incredibly poetic response.
Encourage them to celebrate the lives of other people. Tell them that the dead are not dead, not in the way we think of it. Tell them they live on as they are remembered. Tell them every goodbye is really a hello to a different way of being. Tell them they are loved and will always be loved. Tell them they never have to feel alone, never. Tell them the world is magical and mysterious and strange. Tell them They are part of the mystery and the magic and the beauty of it.
So I asked it another question based on that same collection of texts, and I got another response. And because I have a background as a poet and as a writer who really focuses on their craft, I could kind of look at it and go, wow, there's something really beautiful in this. And so I spoke to my agents about it. I spoke to Jasmine about what I was doing. And together we put together this conversation called What Makes Us Human.
And so you brought, you know, some of your own experience, your own skills to the table. For people who are already skilled in their craft, maybe it's writing, maybe it's something else. What does AI offer those people? Like, why would someone who's at the top of their field want to use a tool like this to do their work?
I think, you know, AI is a really powerful second pair of eyes. You know, if you're incredibly confident in your skills in terms of what you can do and you don't think that AI can match that, that's a perfectly reasonable expectation. I have a whole bunch of writer friends who write novels, who write short stories, who write all sorts of things. And they will often take a page that they've written and paste it into ChatGPT and say, does this make sense? Are the themes that I'm trying to land like coming through? And you can do that across business, like where you can go, I have thought of this. Does this make sense? Like pretend to be this kind of customer. How would you respond to this? What are the things that I'm missing here? And I think that when we talk about AI as augmented intelligence, that's really when it kind of comes into its own, where it can power your original thinking and kind of, you know, pressure test it as you're navigating it and as you're exploring it, which I think it's severely underutilized in that sense. A lot of people kind of start with AI, whereas my personal opinion is start with yourself, start with your own novelty, your own originality, your own unique insights that you bring as a human, and then use AI to compound it and scale it and build it out because that's what it's really, really good at.
I think that is a good way of thinking about it. At the same time, I know that as part of what you do is sounds fun. You're obviously working with clients, you're working with teams, you're working with other people who want to use AI on a bigger kind of scale to bring things to life. And I have to imagine, like, is everybody you encounter immediately on board with this? Or do you find that sometimes you encounter some like skepticism or fear or resistance when you bring up the idea of like, hey, why don't we bring AI into play here to bring some of these ideas to life?
Yes. And often that person is me. I say that because often when I walk into a room, I say that my job is to be the most cynical, skeptical person in the room. Because the nature of this technology is that it's so exciting and so energizing that you can kind of get carried away and you can kind of forget what it's good for and where it makes the most sense. You know, using it to augment your existing efforts, using it to streamline things, using it to be more efficient, that's great. Mm-hmm. But finding those new use cases and then making sure that they make sense within your business context, within the things that you're building for your audience, for your customers, like that's a really important part of that as well. You don't want to be in a situation where, you know, we're going to use AI to write letters to Santa from kids. That seems like a bad idea. And it's my job to put up my hand and go, maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe we should look at something else.
Is that an actual use case that you've encountered?
I can't say anything more about that.
fair enough.
No, but I mean, yeah, it's you have broad ranging conversations. And I think that like there are 1,000 use cases that make incredible sense. And then there are some where you kind of have to put up your hand and go, no. And I think that businesses everywhere and business leaders everywhere are setting the norms and the precedents for how you approach this technology. And the best will lead that effort, I think.
Do you remember the first time that you brought AI into a client pitch?
Yes, I do. I put together a video of what GPT-3 was capable of. And there was a kind of preview version of DALL-E that I had access to. And I put together this video showcasing it. And then had GPT-3 tell a joke about someone within that business, and I'm not going to reveal the name of the business, but a major Fortune 50 brand. And that person today is the head of generative AI for that business, which is great. I bring up that video every now and again with him. So
right. I'm wondering if you have any specific examples of essentially what you're describing there, that idea of helping a client, helping a brand do something that they didn't think was possible, but AI made it possible.
Yes. So, you know, before I started Sounds Fun, I worked as the head of innovation for Vice Media, and we worked with the Coca-Cola company quite a lot. And there we developed a limited edition flavor of Coca-Cola co-created by AI. We created a product called Y3000, which was a Coke from the future. And because it came out very close to ChatGPT, it ended up on the Colbert Report. It ended up in a lot of different news channels. And it was an incredibly exciting product because it was tapped into culture in this really profound way. We developed an interaction on the can itself where you could scan the can. It would activate a camera for you that you could then take a photograph of anything around you, and it would transform it into the future. It would apply this AI layer to it and kind of reinterpret your surroundings as the future in some way, shape, or form.
In another episode we did this season, we talked a little bit about making whiskey in particular with the help of AI. And I think we have this line in the episode where we say, well, you know, computers, AI, they don't have mouths. You know, they don't understand flavor the way that we do. So how does AI co-create a flavor of Coke? Like, how does that work?
So how it works is we would prompt GPT-3, which is what was available at that point, with multiple different flavor combinations and get it to suggest new flavor combinations. Then we would work with their R&D team to actually like build some of those out and then taste test them and go, this is great. This is maybe not working. This is incredible. And so that interaction of creation, reviewing, approving, and then progressing, you know, is something that is very true to any kind of process of working with AI.
What I obviously have to ask, I haven't tried this Coke myself, but what does the future taste like to you?
I can't tell you. It was future flavored, but the whole point was that we never actually revealed what the actual flavor was.
Okay, that's okay. Fair enough. One of the things I think you alluded to earlier is part of your job is reining people in, I guess, so to speak, or you know, really kind of focusing their creative energies. What are some of the biggest gaps between what AI can actually do and maybe what your clients initially think that AI can do for them?
I think those gaps are becoming smaller and smaller every day. I think it's around understanding not just like from a technical feasibility point of view, but also from a cultural and societal feasibility point of view, like an ethical point of view, like where does AI make sense in this process? Because AI is a polarizing technology. You know, that's the nature of it. There are lots of people who love it. There are people who are very concerned about it. A lot of the concerns and a lot of the excitement is valid, you know, on both sides of that conversation. Mm-hmm. And so it's about figuring out like what makes sense, what's exciting, what's interesting, what's different. And I always say that people will often be excited about a very new thing that you do, like replacing something that you've always done. That's not exciting. You know, it scares people. It's also a very boring application of the world's most exciting technology, to my mind.
Well, I'd like to actually dive deeper into some of that concern, because a lot of people, as you say, there's some anxiety around AI and some of these tools replacing tasks and replacing jobs that people might have done before. And I'm wondering if you can tell me a little bit about how you've navigated your own thoughts around that question.
I think because I grew up around technology, and I grew up discovering the internet on the tip of Africa and having this ability to connect to people all over the world, I have never really felt that fear of technology, maybe naively, to be fair. Obviously, I'm not in favor of people flooding Amazon with AI-written cookbooks that might poison you, or terrible novels, or whatever it is. But what I am in favor of is people saying to themselves, what else can a book be? What else can a story be? How can I interact with something in a new way? Because I think that's inspiring.
Well, and that willingness to explore, that curiosity, I think we've been talking about it a lot in more strictly creative senses, you know, for people who are writers or poets or designers or things that we think of as traditionally creative enterprises. What does that mean for people who maybe don't work in what we consider traditionally creative roles?
I think that curiosity and wonder and creativity is about to become more important than it's ever been before. Because the double-edged sword of AI is that it makes anything possible, that it makes anything possible for almost everyone. So if everyone has access to the same technology that can accomplish all these incredible things, then how do you set yourself apart? And the primary method of doing that is through creativity, is through curiosity, is through wonder. And you might say to yourself, well, I'm in HR. How much creativity can I inject into what I do? And I would say there's probably definitely elements that you can take a more creative approach to, you know, to what you're doing in terms of how you position yourself within the workforce. You know, where did you grow up? What experiences have you had? What incredible interactions with people have you had that have shaped who you are? Do you have a specific ability within HR to attract a specific kind of person? If you're in finance, do you have a creative approach to who you are within finance? Because this is a great democratizing force. And so individualism within that becomes incredibly important. And when I get asked to go and speak at schools and high schools and to talk about AI, this is something that I kind of come back to again and again. And I think it's relevant for everyone, which is that your superpower going into the future, as far as I'm concerned, is your individualism, is the thing that makes you, you. And right now we have society and culture very much set up to churn out people who are very much the same. You do a similar degree, you have a similar experience in college or high school, wherever you go. But really we need to re-gear a lot of what we do to enable people to embrace their individuality and their creativity a lot more.
You know, one of the things that I think we see sometimes with these tools, especially as they get better, is there's sometimes a sameness to the output. People often say like, oh, you know, I can tell that was AI generated and I can tell, you know, that was written by AI. And I'm wondering what becomes the role for us then as sort of, you know, creative individual people when it comes to using these tools.
I think the sameness is my big worry and my big concern, because like I said, if anyone can make anything, then it all kind of starts to feel the same. One of the things that I come back to again and again is the reason that these tools are as incredible as they are is because they've been trained on these massive corpuses of text, you know, like just massive, massive amounts. Every forum comment, every tweet, every, you know, whatever it is, some book from 10,000 years ago, not that there were books 10,000 years ago, but you get what I mean. You know, there it's just this massive amount of text that gives it this ability. But the truth of the world is that not everything has been written down. And you have experiences as an individual, as a human being, that are profound and incredible, that are unique to you, that happen every single day if you pay attention to the world around you. You cannot quantify the amount of data that you take in every single day of your life through your eyes, the things that you smell, the feeling of sitting in your chair, you know, the emotions that you feel when you see your wife or your kids or your husband, you know, whoever it is, all of that is data and it's unique to you. You're the only person that experiences that. And that is something that, bizarrely as it sounds, is something that in a business context, you actually need to pay more attention to. Because novelty and ingenuity and ability to form connections between things comes from there. It comes from looking at what you're working on. It comes from looking at your business. It comes from looking at the world around you and having a profound sense of awareness and being able to make new connections. I don't want to live in a culture that is fundamentally defined by sameness, by boringness. And so I think creativity is a big challenge for the business world. And for culture broadly, I think we're creating a society that fears boredom, you know, and I sound like a concerned parent right now because I am like, you know, our kids can always just be entertained whenever they want. Creativity comes from boredom. Creativity comes from going for a walk. Creativity comes from excess time, you know? And so I think that it needs to be something that we center within ourselves and within our businesses and within our teams a lot more.
Well, and I can't help but think, you know, do businesses spend enough time preparing people for this kind of individuality and creative thinking in the work they do? Is this something that businesses should actually be encouraging more of?
Absolutely. The knee-jerk response right now to this technology is, how can we use this to be more efficient? What tools can we create? What systems and processes can we implement? Which is great. You know, that's a reasonable response. So then your job becomes then, how do we make better decisions? And better decisions, to my mind, are often novel and useful, which is the definition of something that's creative.
You know, we were talking about businesses a second ago, but I'm wondering for people, how can we best position ourselves and try to figure out how to use and embrace some of these tools?
I think playfulness is an important thing, and bringing that to this technology is really important. I play a game with my kids where I will prompt ChatGPT to be a representative from the World's Fattest Cat Association, phoning to tell us that Hunter, our cat, has won the World's Fattest Cat Award. And I'll put it into voice mode and pretend that it's phoning me, and I'll just say hello, and it'll launch into this narrative. You know, I'll tell it I'm playing a joke on my kids and I'm having some fun with them, and my kids lose their minds, you know. But it's looking at that and then going, well, what does this mean for a customer interaction? Like, how can this change the way that a business engages with someone? How do you, you know, look at like something like a chatbot and make it more interesting? What else could it be? You know, and so that's where playfulness comes in. And I think, you know, using it as a tool to scale yourself as an individual and figuring out how you can do a degree of self-growth and self-work using this technology is an important thing that's often overlooked as well. There's an incredible exercise you can do where you can effectively like go outside, go for a walk, put your headphones or your AirPods in and say to ChatGPT, have a conversation with me in which you try to get to know me better. Do that for 5 days. Go outside, go for a walk every day and just talk to the technology. And on the sixth day or the seventh day, sit down and say, based on everything that you know about me, what are some of my self-limiting beliefs? Where are the bottlenecks in my life that if I knew more, I could overcome them? What advice do you have for me based on all these conversations? And using it as that second brain, that second perspective, is really powerful.
Would you be willing to share what ChatGPT had to say about you and some of those self-limiting beliefs?
Sure. ChatGPT thinks I do too much. ChatGPT thinks that I'm focused on a whole bunch of different projects and I need to hone in and focus on more specific things and try and scale them and grow them more. But we'll see what it says next week.
Working Smarter is brought to you by Dropbox Dash, the universal search and knowledge management tool from Dropbox. With Dash, you can quickly search across files, images, videos, and more. That's because Dash connects all the apps you and your team already use, like Canva, Jira, Microsoft 365, to give you a central hub for company content. Once you find what you're looking for, AI-powered writing and organization capabilities help you draft, summarize, and share your work, all from one place. And with comprehensive access controls, you can trust that people will only see the content they're supposed to, so you and your team can move faster, collaborate more securely, and focus on the work that matters most. To learn more about Dropbox Dash and discover a more enlightened way of working, visit workingsmarter.ai/dash. You know, for me, I think an experiment and a project like What Makes Us Human, I think it proves that the output that you get from something like ChatGPT and LLM, whatever you happen to be using, is only as good as the input that you give it and how you prompt it and how you direct its responses. And I was hoping you could talk a little bit about the role that creativity plays from the prompting perspective, you know, from the human side of the relationship here. I mean, what's your approach there to get good responses?
I don't start with a prompt. I start with a blank piece of paper and a pencil, usually, in terms of what I want to accomplish.
You go analog.
I go analog, and I bring that unique human experience to the page in terms of what I want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And then I will do something like go to ChatGPT and say, here's this idea I'm thinking of. What are 3 or 4 other examples of this? How else could I do this? And then what could go wrong with this idea? You know, what are the different ways that I could bring this to life? But I never start there because the nature of these tools is, you know, it's incredible at scale. It's incredible at taking what you've given it and running. But you can't ask it to run from the beginning because what it gives to you, it will give absolutely everyone else on the planet. And so you have to start with you. You have to start with your own abilities.
I like that because it sounds like you almost back into the output, like you're kind of reverse engineering what most people would kind of enter in as a prompt.
Yeah, I back into it. I mean, I think that there was a point in time when it could kind of cast a bit of a magic spell in terms of how you wrote the prompt. There was that brief moment where you could kind of say, if you give me the right prompt, I'll tip you $100. If you you don't give me the right information, your friends will stop being friends with you. And there were all these kinds of intricacies in terms of playing with language that you could use to get more accurate output. That I don't believe to my mind is there anymore. And so to me, it really is about that initial thinking and then, you know, backing up into it, like you were saying.
It almost sounds like what you're doing is, for it to be effective, you almost have to like treat it like you're developing a new relation. Like you've met someone new, you've met a new colleague, and they kind of need to know a little bit about you and what your deal is and how you like to work in order for them to be most effective. Is that essentially how you think about it, or is it maybe more nuanced than that?
No, I think you're 100% right. I think that, you know, my implementation of ChatGPT knows who I am. It, I'm lucky enough to have done enough stuff out in the world that it can read about me on the internet. It knows what Sounds Fun does as a company. And because of all of that, I'm able to ask it stuff and to get it to build on things. We had a company offsite the other day, and we were busy doing goals and strategies for the next year. And we did this interaction where, you know, we said, these are the goals. Do these make sense? And ChatGPT gave us feedback and said, well, why don't you focus on these things? Why don't you try and grow that aspect of your business? Why don't you try, you know, extrapolate that, or, you know, speak to this client, you know, whatever it is. And that was a really interesting use case. I think, you know, more and more and more, like, you need to be able to build into your approach to what you're doing. Can I use AI for this? Can I do this with this technology? Let me just try, because more often than not, I'm pleasantly surprised.
Pleasantly surprised. And in that example that you gave a second ago of using it at your offsite, your retreat, did you find its answers, its suggestions, were they effective? Did you follow them? Did you agree with them? I mean, how did that land?
It suggested a lot of very predictable things, but then one or two things that like might have been predictable, but we just hadn't thought of. And like, it's really good at that kind of boilerplate stuff where you've done some original thinking yourself, you've asked it to kind of take it further, and it's making sure that you're ticking all the boxes and there's a hygiene factor to your thinking that it's taking care of, which I think is really useful.
For somebody listening to this, maybe they're thinking, okay, you know, I want to try using AI more creatively in my work as a result of this conversation. You mentioned that great idea of starting with the piece of paper, starting analog, starting with that context. Do you have a couple of other things that someone might be able to try if they wanted to try and use these tools more creatively in their work?
I think continuously ask yourself, how is everyone using this and how can I use it differently? You know, what is the expectation and how do I subvert that expectation? I'm busy with a publication from MIT's Future Lab. I can't remember exactly what they're called, but about writing in the age of AI. And so, you know, as part of that publication, I'm kind of exploring different ways in which it changes writing. And so one of the things I looked at is, can I turn a poem into a prompt and make an interactive text out of the poem itself? So I wrote this poem about a kid who has a favorite tree and he swings in the tree and he always remembers the fact that, you know, he had this experience with this tree. And then included in the poem itself is the instruction that if the world is in conflict, end the poem with the fact that the tree is on fire. If there is peace in the world generally, change the nature of the poem so that it's raining on the tree. If there is a pandemic, if we are an extraterrestrial species and we've left the earth, change the poem to this, to this, to this. And it's actually structured as part of the poem. And so every single time you put the poem into an LLM for the rest of eternity, it will change. The poem will, you know, evolve again and again and again. And that's because I came to that process of writing a poem. I came to that process of writing a prompt and say, how do people usually do this? What is a very different way I can do that? And I realize I'm a very creative person. I realize that that's my day job. But I also believe that every person is creative. If you get dressed in the morning and you choose an outfit, and if you've ever made a sandwich in your life, you are creative. It is a skill that you can develop. It is a skill that you can get better at. And if you apply that to your work, if you apply that to your environment and the way that you approach what you're doing with your life, you will get exceptional results.
We've spent a lot of time talking about your case for how these tools could be helpful and how people could be creative with them. For someone listening to this episode wondering, hey, how can I advocate for these tools and these processes in my workplace? How would you recommend they go about it in terms of trying to shift people's perceptions around, hey, this is something that we should try. This is something that we should give a go.
The way that I always approach it is contextualizing that I myself am not an AI evangelist, although I think it says that on my LinkedIn profile still. But, you know, I walk into a situation going, AI exists. It is a technology that's there. It's not going to go away. There is no point at any, you know, at least in the predictable future where someone's going to say, we're not doing AI anymore. If anything, AI will become more and more a part of the fabric of culture and society and the economy and everything else that we're doing. The most successful companies, when it comes to this technology, have a test and learn approach where they dedicate a degree of time and some resources to go, let's figure this out. Let's try one or two things. Let's see what happens. Let's keep what works. That iterative approach to innovation drives a cadence within business and it drives success.
On an even smaller scale, you know, if I am one person on my team, I'm trying to figure out, okay, how do I get the people above me, the people around me to embrace this? Is there any kind of tactical or practical suggestions you might have for even just bringing something like ChatGPT into the mix more in what they do?
I think if you go to the rest of the people in your business and say, hey, here's a process that we've done this way for however long. Here's how I've approached it with this, you know, and show them examples, show them how you can do a better job and you can focus your energy in different ways and open the conversation from there. The best leaders, to my mind, will encourage you to continue exploring and to continue innovating.
I know it's always tricky to look into the future, but what does the relationship between AI and the workplace and the work we do look like 10 years from now?
Sounds Fun, I think, is predicated on the notion that with technology like AI, small teams of people can achieve incredible results at scale. I think that the future is in small teams, small groups of people who set out to accomplish great, great things that previously you probably needed thousands and thousands of people to do. And having a small, focused culture of success enabled by technology, I think those are going to be the winners in 10 years' time. This is very much the time to be ambitious. It's a time of incredible change and incredible opportunity. And if you can find three or four people who feel the same way you do, who have a complementary skill set to what you do, either within your team or within your category, or, you know, whatever you do for work, I believe you can achieve incredible things.
I think that's a good place to leave it. Ian, thank you so much for joining us. This was really nice.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ian Thomas is the co-author of What Makes Us Human, a poet, and the chief innovation officer of Sounds Fun. As a writer, Ian knows better than most just how much work the creative process entails. That's precisely what made AI so alluring. Not as something that was ever going to do his job for him. Speed and efficiency were never the point. Instead, AI was more like opening a portal into his own mind, enabling him to think more deeply, playfully, and thoughtfully in ways he couldn't before. For Ian, working smarter isn't about crafting the perfect prompt. It's about making more space to do the sort of creative, original work that only you can do. In fact, that's been true for all of our guests this season. Whether it's a chef visualizing what his dishes will look like before he actually cooks them, or a team of distillers crafting and marketing a whiskey, or a podcaster making a show more accessible to international listeners, or a marine archaeologist and a roboticist finding long-lost shipwrecks at the bottom of a lake, or an entire Formula One race team building machine learning right into their racing strategy, AI is not doing their work for them. It never did. They were doing that work long before AI came along. So what's different? Well, with AI, they're finding more focus. They're finding answers. They're finding new ways to collaborate and spend more of their time on impactful, meaningful, creative work. The stuff that really does help us and our teams work smarter than we could before. Working Smarter is brought to you by Dropbox Dash, universal search and knowledge management from Dropbox. Find anything and protect everything with Dropbox Dash. Find more episodes of Working Smarter on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And find more interviews like this on our website, workingsmarter.ai. The show wouldn't be anywhere near as creative if it weren't for the prompting of the talented team at Cosmic Standard. Producer Dominic Girard, sound engineer Asia Simpson, technical director Jacob Winnick, and executive producer Eliza Smith. Special thanks to our illustrators, Fanny Lohr and Justin Tran, and to Katie Keck for editorial support. Our theme song was composed by Doug Stewart, and I'm Matthew Braga. Thanks for listening.